Jake Gyllenhaal, male Winona Ryder. Same big yes. eyes, gothiness about them, yes. intensity. Hello, you're listening to The Big Film Buffet with me, one of your hosts, Alexi Toliopoulos. And joining me as my co-host, as always, is the wonderful, the wickedly talented, the one and only Jen Fricker.
I love the way you say wickedly talented.
Well, I embody Travolta himself, one of the golden gods of the art that we discuss in this podcast, which is movies, darling. We are talking to you about what our what-to-watch recommendations are for this weekend on Netflix. And Jen, what are we talking about today?
This weekend, we reckon you should get around Heathers, a teen cult movie classic that is on Netflix right now.
Your true feelings were too gross and icky for you to face.
I did not want them dead.
You did too.
I did not.
Jen, I think you accurately call this movie a cult classic. I think this movie embodies what a cult is because it has such a big fan base that are so passionate after it came out, what, like over 25, 30 years ago now in the late 1980s. And how would you describe Heathers to the uninitiated?
The logline of this film in one sentence is Mean Girls, but with murders. As you said, Alexi, it's a film that came out in the late 80s and it is a pitch black teen comedy. It is so dark. Mm-hmm. Basically, you have Winona Ryder's character. She's part of like the popular group, but she's become very bored with how cruel they are to the rest of the high school. And she kind of fantasizes about them dying.
Yeah.
She meets Christian Slater's character. They fall in love. He kind of starts murdering people.
Yeah.
And it all unravels from there. It sounds dark. It is very, very funny. Mm-hmm. It's really quite a surprising 80s film. You know, for me, a lot of my knowledge of that era was from like the John Hughes movies, Breakfast Club, that kind of thing, where it's quite saccharine and sweet. This is not that at all. This was written as a response to those films being so saccharine. Mm-hmm. It is dark. There's a lot of swearing. There's a lot of murders. And it's a very cynical world that these kids inhabit.
Absolutely. This was also a first-time watch for me as well. Obviously, I've heard about it a lot because it is an iconic teen classic. I remember that poster with like Christian Slater holding Winona Ryder in front of a blackboard. So it has like this look. That poster sets your expectations into thinking like, well, this is going to be like your classic good girl, bad boy, teen rom-com from the 80s. But like you said, it is so dark. I can't even fathom this movie being made at any other point in history.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say it's an easy watch.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how dark it is very dark. So it's really for people who like their comedy pitch black, who are ready to like get into some dark areas. Mm. Because, the way they kind of talk about things, these murders, there's a bit of like gun violence in the film. Where we're at historically now, that has a completely different meaning to where people were at culturally in the late 80s. So you've got to kind of flag as that. It's very much a product of its time. Mm-hmm. And tonally, it's very of its time. But it is so influential, this film, across all teen movies. If you've watched a teen movie ever, it has likely been influenced in some way by this film. So it kind of feels like watching a history of cinema.
Totally. I think that's what kind of like grabbed me about this film is that the way that it's stylized, like through costuming, through production design, through the camera even, there is like this look of like capturing that 1950s idea, that very American ideal of suburbia, where we've got the jocks wearing the Letterman jackets. We've got like the Heathers themselves, which is a group of four popular girls. Three of them are called Heather. One of them is played by the great Shannon Doherty. And then Veronica, played by Winona Ryder, being like the kind of offset outcast leaving that group.
Mm.
But they're like these very cruel popular girls, but they all wear like those plaid push-out skirts and like their little cardigan jackets.
A lot of pastels.
Like a lot of pastels.
Color graded for the gods, this film.
Absolutely. This is for the back of the room, the color grading on this.
Yeah. My condolences to dogs, because you will not see any of the vivid color in this.
Heathers will mean a little less to you if you're the canine variety of listener. But it captures like this idea and this look of like 1950s America. But then it's like a satire of that for the modern age. So I think Heathers, like, you know, it's a teen comedy, but it's also, like we're saying, very dark. It's surprisingly how much this reminded me of the work of like auteurs of that era. Singular voices in film that are like, your David Lynch, who would talk a lot about American suburbia through stuff like Blue Velvet.
Yes.
Really would capture that same kind of vibe. And then, of course, the big one for me watching this is John Waters.
Yes.
Who would do stuff like Polyester, I think, is a real like treatise on like American suburbia as it was created through melodrama.
Mm.
He would have so much iconography of the 1950s, especially teenage films from the 1950s when he would have been a teenager watching those movies from like the 50s and 60s. That are all like about that angst, and he would kind of like imbue with like kind of very camp, high camp comedy.
Mm.
I think the camp is all there, and this is quite a camp comedy, but there is so much like dread and darkness, and teen films work in this heightened world so well.
Yeah.
Where there are like heightened stakes.
Mm.
And I think this captures them in a really interesting way by bringing them to be literally life and death and all the dread surrounding some stuff like that, that makes it so darkly resonant.
Yes. Something that really spoke to me in this film was this sense of alienation.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are a teenager,
yes,
there are moments where you're like, I don't relate to anyone. And, you know, who are my friends? And I think that's one of the reasons that this movie is so timeless,
mm-hmm,
is that that is always going to be something that teenagers across all history can,
yeah,
kind of relate to, is like looking at your parents and being like, oh, they're not the perfect people, mm-hmm, that I thought. Looking at what the future could be and wondering how you fit into that. And then maybe having that moment where you kind of realize that the people around you aren't going to be in your life forever.
Yes.
How that manifests in this film is Veronica wanting to kill friends.
Yeah, and I gotta say, everything you just talked about is so powerfully embodied by like this rock star of a movie star, which, mm, is Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
Who is just so, with this film coming right hot on the heels of Beetlejuice, she embodies like this kind of gothy outsider. You know, she's already in that Tim Burton world. Now she's doing it again in a much like darker cult classic.
Mm.
And this was a part that she really chased after. Really, she went after this role because this script kind of existed. It was out there. People knew about it. But she was in Beetlejuice, so she kind of liked this dark material. But because that's such a big, funny, like movie and pretty mainstream for something as weird as that,
mm,
she was kind of being pushed more into a mainstream movie star direction, especially like teen idol thing.
Yeah.
And then she was like, that's not me. I am this gothy person. This is the movie that I want. And so she jumps on it. And I think, like, you know, Winona Ryder to me is such a fascinating actor, such a fascinating star, because she has like this huge movie star career around this time.
Mm.
And often it's playing like really interesting young independent women that are different from everyone else around them, are kind of like out of time or out of sync,
mm,
but they are like so strong and so strong and valued. Like, to me, as much as I love the new Little Women adaptation, the Greta Gerwig one with Saoirse Ronan, Winona Ryder in Gillian Armstrong's adaptation of Little Women is my Jo March.
Mm.
Like, because she captures like that kind of theater girl energy, that goth energy that like makes that character sing so much for me. And I think that she like embodies everything. She's,
yeah,
like such a singular actor and movie star that I'm so glad that she's like had like this cultural revitalization and like this new arc of her career now, that when people go back like we have this week to rediscover Heathers, you can just understand so fully who she is,
yeah,
as not just a cultural icon, but like as an actor.
Building on what you're saying, like, I've been thinking about it a lot, like the difference between like cinema, mm-hmm, and TV, because I guess, mm, the way like I've been consuming pop culture and stuff,
yeah,
over the last year, like most of us have, is being like at home,
yeah,
via like TV, via like the, mm, internet, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Everything kind of on a small screen. And what you're saying about how she's such a singular actor really speaks to me, because She's really cinematic in her performance. Like, it's so small. And I feel like when you watch teen movies now, they're these very big kind of broad paintings. Mm. They're really trying to sell you this idea of like, yeah, I'm hot, but I'm insecure or whatever. And for Winona Ryder, it's like, you see her in these films like Edward Scissorhands and stuff like that, where she's so striking on screen. And her performance is so intimate and small. Like, you have to lean in, but she's so incredible to watch that every single, like, movement of, like, an eyebrow or the way she looks, her eyes and stuff like that, it's all so fascinating that she really doesn't have to, like, do a lot for you to be completely pulled in.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, in this film, the premise of her character being like, I'm a mean hot girl who hates her friends and wants them to die.
Yeah.
For that to be pitched as like a lead character and to make that likable, for you to want to like root along for her is so hard. And I feel like that's also why like she's such a singular talent, because she can just carry that off. And then pair that with Christian Slater, who is, I get it now. You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
Culturally, I was aware that he was hot. You know what I mean?
But I'm the guys are hung. The guys are stud. The guys are spunk. We'll say it on the record. We are believers of the Christian faith, which is the Christian Slater faith. Okay, we're Christians on this podcast.
But the two of them, I'm like, this is incredible to watch. Yeah. Just next to each other. So hot, so charismatic, so much chemistry.
Absolutely, and they both have like this satirical energy that's like innate to them. Mm. I think Slater is a breakout role for him too. And he does like this kind of parody, this impersonation of Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, totally.
He does like this Jack Nicholson
greetings
thing.
And salutations.
Oh, that's good.
Thank
dude.
You.
Greetings and salutations. It's me, Christian Slater, and Jack Nicholson talking through the same freaking head, okay? We're the same freaking guy, okay? And I think like he captures like that dangerous Jack energy, that devilish charm of Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
And I think like he does that here, and then he does that for 40 years.
Yes.
He does that forever.
Because I guess that's what people want from him.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because he is such like an innate bad boy.
Mm.
And he's just got that charm and energy. And he does this thing in this movie that blew my brains into the dust, I'll say, because I had never seen this before. And it was such like an interesting thing. And I wonder if it's on a script level by Daniel Waters, who was the writer of this film, or if it was in the performance and like finding it in this, where he's got this weird relationship with his dad. His dad's kind of like an absentee father who is like a multi-millionaire corporatist.
His dad's trade is that he's a demolition man. He blows up buildings.
Exactly.
And he thrives on that.
He lives on it. He thrives on it.
And it's a real 80s idea of capitalism. You know, they've got a big minimalist house with lots of marble and black like furniture, and it's very cold.
It itself is kind of like commentary on like the John Hughes like exemplification of like Reaganism, you know, Reagan era Republican politics in those films. But then they have this dialogue exchange where they call each other father and son, and they like play.
But they swap it, right?
They swap it around where the dad's calling him, oh, hello, father, how are you? And I've got a girl you'd like, you know, playing around with it. And I was like, I hadn't seen that before. And it felt like such an interesting way to like get into these characters. These two people are kind of close because they are father and son, but there also is like this gap between them. So they have to play the games to even be able to get into like what a regular father and son relationship is.
Like they're representing to each other an idea of family rather than like existing in a family dynamic.
And I thought this is just some rock star movie stuff, dude.
The whole film has this like real edge to it where you just like, it feels dangerous to watch.
Really, it does.
And because like, you know, Winona Ryder's character could so easily be unlikable, because Christian Slater's character is so anarchic that you kind of feel a bit on edge. Like there's an anxiety to this film that like makes it really compelling. And as audiences watching movies today, I think because there's so much competition for like audiences and keeping people involved, we don't usually get that kind of tension and anxiety. Like I don't know. I did keep feeling at moments watching this film, I was like, do I want to turn this off? Is this actually too much?
I would say that it took me a minute to like buy into things. Like it was, I didn't warm to this movie straight away, but by the end of it, I'm like, this is a new favorite for me. This is a real new teen favorite.
The design is incredible.
I think you see through that design, like, kicks off stuff that come later on in the next decade, like Clueless looks like this, and that's still kind of modeled in the 50s and then the 80s as well. And then the darker kind of like teen movies that are like kind of in the realm of like, you know, dark stuff like horror, but they're still more so about like the dynamic of teen groups than stuff like your Halloweens or Nightmare on Elm Street.
Like The Craft. Like, obviously it's like kind of a horror supernatural film, but it's also about being like a teenager and trying to figure out who you are and fitting in within a dynamic and feeling that alienation. It's really interesting to watch this movie because it exists in like an amoral universe. When I was watching this film, I really could see the history of cinema from that point. Like, for example, you mentioned Clueless before, and like you see it in the Heather's uniform. They all have these individually color-coded like identities. One of them is red, one of them is yellow, one of them is green. It really reminded me of Clueless with the main character Cher, and she's got her like kind of big shoulder paddy plaid blazers that she wears to school and stuff like that. And it's like a social identifier. And you're like, that definitely feels like it came from Heather's. You know, it was made about 6 years afterwards. So.
And I think the language as well, there's something in the use of language and like the odd vocabularies that kind of translates into like where 90s teen films went for a while. Another movie that really feels like is like a descendant of this film that I had a little bit more when I was growing up was Jawbreaker. With Rose McGowan.
I love that film. I was obsessed with film. And again, so dark.
So dark.
Such a dark film.
But I feel like that movie could never exist if Heathers didn't come in and like break the mold down for like what a teen movie could be. That we could get something like kind of even weirder with Jawbreaker.
Winona Ryder. The characters that she plays, it'd be easier to say like they're ingenues.
Yeah.
But there's something that's less kind of like fetishized. She's a girl that isn't really performing for men.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Whereas like I feel like ingenue generally has that idea of like if you're an ingenue, you're like cute and beautiful and aloof and like kind of a muse for men.
Yes.
And I feel like Jawbreaker definitely has like a spirit of that in the female characters where, they are hot and terrifying.
Yeah.
But again, it's really about the dynamics of women in social settings together and that prison that beauty puts people in, perhaps.
Yeah.
I mean, we all feel sorry for hot people, obviously.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much for feeling sorry for
me.
But, you know, great to have friends being empathetic with my life and my struggle.
I don't understand your struggle, but I stand with you.
Thank you.
Classic me Googling a film while I'm watching a film.
Yeah.
But,
what have you unlocked?
Well, I found out that this film was originally written as a spec script for Stanley Kubrick.
Really? The Stanley Kubrick?
Yeah.
We're talking Stanley Kubrick, who we know from The Shining. We know from Full Metal Jacket.
From The Moon Landing.
From Faking the Moon Landing.
Faking the Moon Landing, yeah.
2001 African Space Odyssey, my favorite movie set 20 years ago. Okay? Same year that Ghost World happens. People are up in space and they're on the moon looking at cool shit. And then people are looking at vinyl records in Ghost World.
Do you believe that those two movies exist in the same universe?
I do. And I actually tweeted that once and the director of Ghost World replied to it saying, I like this theory.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you, Terry Zwigoff. We love you, brother.
Daniel Waters wrote it as kind of, I guess, a dark satire in the way that like Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, it was like a satire on Cold War. This is like a satire on like
the
lives of corporate America's children and suburbia and stuff.
Which like when I was watching, I'm like, I wonder like...
What could he have done?
I feel like maybe he would have leaned more into a horror thing perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps.
I'm really glad that this movie exists as it is. Yeah. It is just interesting to imagine what Kubrick would have done with it.
Yeah, because he's covered so many genres. I'm like, what would he have done with the teen stuff? What would he have been able to do with it?
I don't know. I know that he usually, you know, has these like very strong female central characters, but they're usually they're quite a hysterical performance from him. Yeah. And I feel like this all works because Winona Ryder's character, Veronica, is so cool and calm and collected and can understand right from wrong. Just when I was watching it, I was like, I just couldn't imagine this in anyone else's hands.
And especially in this era, Kubrick is kind of like coming off epic cinema and then eventually going into more intimate, weird stuff like Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, maybe it'd be more like masks and stuff.
Yeah, a few more masks, some Christmas trees and lights around.
Mm.
This movie so has like the language of those original Archie comics in here. It so has that look. I think that JD character, the Christian Slater role, is almost like a real messed up version of Jughead or something.
Yeah.
And then, of course, one of Ryder's characters is literally called Veronica. There's another character called Betty. Mm. So I feel like it is taking that language that America would have been so familiar with and then making it dark. And then you watch Riverdale, which I'm a fan of. I love Riverdale because I do love Archie so much as well.
Yeah.
And to see that like go, yeah, we're doing Archie, but it's like Heathers. To see it kind of come full circle and get that understanding.
It's like if Heathers was directed by David Lynch.
Mm, absolutely. Twin Peaks.
Yeah, Twin Peaks. Yeah, Heathers is Riverdale.
It's like the bridging film between Archie the comics to Riverdale's take on Archie.
Yeah, and it is, I feel, equally as dark as Riverdale.
Oh, I'd even go a little further down the darkness path, which is what I call any walk across into darkness is down the darkness path. But I would say that if you're a listener of this podcast and you love Riverdale, I really do think you'll get a lot out of watching Heathers. But it does come with a bit of a warning because it does talk about quite some controversial and mature themes in a way that's like quite unusual.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you're used to watching teen movies, there's usually like a lesson or a heart to it.
Yeah.
And that does not exist in this movie.
Yeah, there's this a heart, but it's a real dark, rotten one.
It's rotten out. It's an amoral world that these characters live in. It really feels like quite a claustrophobic movie because these teenagers really don't see a future. And there's a lot of talk of suicide in the film. There's gun violence. There's like shootings and stuff that watching it now can be quite confronting. So just an absolute warning. If you're not into that, then maybe this isn't the film for you. But I will say it is such a great indictment of American culture and the way it sells itself through teenagers and through this idea of like capitalism and freedom and things like that. And watching these kids kind of see their parents literally destroying the world and being like, I don't want to grow up. I don't want to grow up to be that. So I'm just not going to grow up.
Yeah, I would agree with you. This gets like my highest recommendation if that's the kind of thing that you're into.
Mm.
It is worth watching because I really feel like this like finally filled the gap missing in my film knowledge watching this movie. I found an incredibly rich text. So it gets a huge recommendation from us here at the Big Film Buffet. If you just watch Heathers and you're looking for a little bit more, there are a few other films on Netflix that I think will like settle that itch for you. I would give Jawbreaker a big recommendation.
Yes.
As we already did in this podcast, it's right the next one in line. I'd say Easy A, that kind of interesting like take on the Scarlet Letter that we had a few years ago with Emma Stone. A few years ago, I reckon I saw that movie in high school, so it's a little more than a few years ago, but I absolutely adore that movie. And then another one that's like a bit of a sleeper hit, a hidden gem on there, is Anya Taylor-Joy and the late, great Anton Yelchin in this movie called Thoroughbreds, which is really weird, really dark, new take on a teen film.
Murderous Horse Girls?
Yeah, dude, big time.
Yeah, I'm really keen to watch that. I've heard so many good things.
I think it's right up your alley. This is a big recommendation from me to Jen Fricker.
Thank you. As a listener and purveyor of pod, I appreciate the recommendation. It really reminded me so much of, and I think we've talked about this before, but I'm not sure, one of my favorite films growing up, and I feel like it says so much about me.
You look so embarrassed already. Oh, I can't wait to hear what it is.
Because it's so cringe. I was obsessed with Donnie Darko growing up.
Oh, my God. Of course you were, dude. Of course.
In hindsight, I'm like, it's so obvious.
Oh my God.
Like, yeah.
I know you. I know you.
I'm like a little arty goth girl who just loved Donnie Darko. And I was like, yeah, I freaking get it when I did not get it at all.
You can't see him, but I got a big tall rabbit called Frank following me around the world right now, man. Dude.
Yeah, man. It's a modern film that was set in the 80s.
Yeah.
But I feel like inhabits the same kind of universe, like extremely dark comedy.
Yeah, it's almost like a supernatural-ish version of Heathers.
Yeah. And, you know, it deals a lot with death and alienation and growing up rich in the suburbs and the emptiness of that kind of Reagan era commercialization and stuff like that.
Can I say something I just had a thought of?
Please.
Jake Gyllenhaal, male Winona Ryder. Same big eyes, gothiness about them, intensity. And I think oddball fellas really go, yeah, I love Gyllenhaal, dude.
Shut
I'm a
up,
nightcrawler,
man.
Dude.
Actually, can I tell you something funny?
Yeah, yeah.
I was going through my notes and I found an email that I'd sent to myself from 2010. Mm-hmm. And it was a quote from Charlie Kaufman.
Oh, my God.
About cinema. And I was just like, of course you.
Oh, my
like,
God,
like, don't
dude.
You reckon I would have just been the worst, like, cinema bro?
Nah, you would have been. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And I just was like, of course I loved Donnie Darko growing up. I still feel like that. Those are good films, but like, of course I was like, there's a meaning here, man,
oh
and it's bigger than what we
That's
all think.
So good. I think one of the greatest saving graces of my life and career was I had my film bro phase when I was like 13.
Yeah.
So like nobody saw it. I had no friends to talk to about it because none of them watched movies like that. So I'm like, I escaped it so cleanly.
Far out. Heathers is out right now on Netflix. Get around it if you love a dark, dark teen comedy. And make sure you subscribe to The Big Film Buffet on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods.
This episode was hosted by me, Alexi Tuliopoulos, and Jen Fricker.
Produced by Michael Sun and Anu Hasbold.
Edited by Jeffrey O'Connor.
Executive produced by Tony Broderick and Melanie Marnie.